restate it. And a lot of, you know, I'm a realist, and I know that we kind of had navigated some rough waters, but I wanted to point to some things. First of all, Full Life's still here. That's something. You know, we have done quite a number of things over the last number of years. I recently had a talk with Steve Pope, who has always been a friend and a peer. And he was he felt prompted to talk to me about the priority and importance of Full Life in CME. And he was expressing that in some ways he had felt a little bit ripped off because he knew that God had called me to go to seminary, and he knew why. And yet at the same time, he was feeling that there's a dynamic in the city that hasn't been here because I'm not here. You know, I mean, I've gone to go to school. And he felt it was important to just talk to me because I don't know what prompted him, but he felt that the Spirit had spoke to him and felt that it was important that he talked about the things in the city that wouldn't exist if Full Life wasn't here. So in our early days, the March for Jesus came to the city in the early 90s. And Sue and I were very big on the prayer movement. We had attended the School of Associates with and graduated with Ed Silvoso. Some of you don't know who that is, but he definitely is a guy who, he wrote a book called That None Should Perish, and he was a progressive when it came to intercessory prayer. And Sue and I had gone to many of those conferences and sat under his teaching with the idea that intercessory prayer was changing, that it no longer was just done in this little closet, but that there was a dynamic, active part of intercession that involved being seen. And so we sat on the steering committee, I think it was 1993, actually, and brought the March to Jesus for the city. And I was appreciative of him reminding me because sometimes you kind of forget what you did, you know. And then we started doing lots of different community-wide outreaches, which right now I don't even go to those, and I don't. I think it's more by way of confession. But the Concerts of Prayer in Simi Valley had been revitalized, and there was myself and Rod Ritchie felt that it was important. And at the time that those had happened in the city, they were very dynamic, and there was a lot of gospel punch, and they were vital. And then they kind of became a dead work because people kind of got the wrong motivation about it. But we were involved in that. We had set up the first 24-hour prayer room in Simi Valley. And at the time we had our offices down there, it was such that someone could just enter a code into the door and get access to the building and just pray 24 hours a day. There was constant worship music, and we had a very bold strategy. And there were some hits that we took because of it spiritually, I felt, but it was dynamic and it was real. And there was a lot of good things that happened there. Sylvia and Sue went over a notebook journal that we had been keeping probably now going on, I don't know, 5 years. And it's amazing to see the prophecies and how those things have come to pass, the words that the Lord gave us and what we've done. He reminded me that we were a progressive in church unity. And he had kind of apologized because at the time that the churches could have came together, it got kind of, they had this idea of church fathers that just went a little awry that was making me feel just a tad bit uncomfortable. But it was to the point where they wanted to establish this council, like people always do. God does something and then people try to administrate it. And it kind of killed the movement. But the idea was is that the church should be unified. I had an opportunity last month to help a girl on a project who was doing what's called spiritual mapping of the Chatsworth area. And she was advised to contact me because of the data and records that we had kept on spiritual mapping in the area. And that fell into the hands of a prof at the school who knows me and then kind of contacted me about what I actually knew about spiritual mapping and intercessory prayer. And I think she was surprised to find out how involved I was, Sue was, in that movement. And many of us here, Lacey's included, have always been a part of that. It's a pretty big movement. And the prayer track of the 1040 window and the 4070 windows, believe it or not, from here, Little Simi Valley, we had quite a big voice in our small little church into how that was going to operate, what was really going to be the parameters to that. And without boasting, I'm not a boaster, but Steve had felt that since that time, there's been just a strong sense of disunity in the city. And it's been difficult to see things come together. A lot of works have failed in Simi over the last 10 years. And he was just kind of encouraging me about the existence of Full Life and what it meant. And when we started the church, I felt that it was important that we would, the only reason we would stay open is if we were different enough to have some individuality. And at that time, there really was this lack of spiritual focus. You know, the acknowledgement that God is active and moving and real and power encounters were happening. I mean, there was definitely a shortage of spirit-filled places, you know. There are places that talked about believing in the Spirit, but they weren't happening in the open congregations. There were prayer rooms and other kinds of things set up to control it, but it really wasn't part of the dynamic life, and so I felt it was important to move forward in that. So I feel at this phase that it's important to call your attention to some things. First of all, it would have been, Full Life will have now, this will be our 10th, we are finishing our 10th year. And we've been big at one time, and now I think we're in a manageable area, and sometimes we have a lot, you know, more than we do now, and sometimes it depends on whether you count ears or whatever, but we still have impact. I tease people that I think we have four services. We have the first Sunday of the month, the second Sunday of the month, because different people can come, but not all at the same time. But I think that if you think of pastoring in terms of influence, then we definitely have a much bigger congregation than maybe what meets here. Maybe it's better to think of this as kind of a leadership gathering because our sphere of influence is larger, if that makes sense. And that's why I can look at smaller crowds and I don't get disheartened because I recognize that there's a Full Lifers everywhere. I mean, we have Full Lifers at Mike Bickle's place and that's where the Kings are, that they're in Hawaii, they're in Singapore, they're in Australia, you know, they're everywhere. And in some dimension, Full Life has kind of already begun to touch the world, even as small as we are. We've had some influence because of the weird way that we look at the world. And I think that's our strength, is that we have a strange way of viewing the world. So Full Life will be 10 years old. And I was just wondering, because I'm thinking of seasons, you know, what does that mean, you know? Number two, I'm finishing an MDiv. And it connects to Steve's conversation with me in this, that he said, John, you've always been a person who's walked it all the way out. And I'm finishing an MDiv, which is what I felt like the Lord called me to do it. And people misinterpret why I did this. It wasn't because I felt like I needed to have an MDiv, because that's important. I mean, I felt it was God's call for me to do it. And then I was committed to walking it out, and I feel like I've grown because of it in my communication and in my personhood. I feel like how I see myself, I think that that's grown. And it's interesting that that would look like it has, because I started in 1999, and now it's 2007. And if you look at the way the calendar, the academic calendar works, it really is 7 years. So it took me about 4 years to finish my bachelor's degree because I had some ground to make up because I took a lot of conferences and I did a lot of things, but I didn't have formal college credits to my name because of that. I mean, I had my secular college, but it doesn't really apply in a Bible college. And then I did an MDiv in about 2.5 years, which is unheard of because most people do it in 5 and some can do it in 3 if you work at it, and I've done it in a little over 2.5 years. So I've been committed. I want you to know I've been committed. I've not let up. And I feel like I'm ending that season, but the number 7 rings in my head as being significant. It's been 7 years since I did it, and I felt like I walked it all the way out. I mean, I feel like I did not shortcut the process, and I feel I stayed the course, okay, because what God spoke in my heart to do. I felt that letting go of some things had to do with this philosophy that I got from this lady named Melba Hodges, which maybe two of you know who that is. But she wanted, three of us, maybe. But she was an advisor to me early on in my ministry, and I think she's 118 now. But, and don't tell her I said that. But she once told me to not kill the golden goose. And I was like in my 20s when she told me that. And what she said was, is that if all comes crashing down around you, you hold on to what's important. And I felt, what was important about Full Life? Well, I'll tell you, it wasn't buildings. I'll tell you, it wasn't computer equipment and it wasn't desks. It was the people that you have influence over. And so we've done that. We've stood the test of time that way. And the third thing I think is kind of interesting is that you have the 10th year, you have the 7th year. It just all speaks to me of a day of new beginnings. Because I'll tell you, as a person, I have been feeling more movement of the Spirit in very simple things. And I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about. I mean, there was a time in my vineyard days when thinking about worship would be an hour, hour and a half proposition. And if you've been to a vineyard church at all, you would know that they actually break the service, a typical vineyard will break the service up in half. So they'll have about a good hour, hour and a half of worship that lays you out. And then they take a break because you're so exhausted. And then you come back for the teaching, you know. So it can look like a whole day. I kind of brought that up again because the Benitezes are thinking about going to a vineyard church, which will be for them a very huge step because they've always thought that the vineyards were a little freaky, you know. But they're taking a step and going to a vineyard, and they're like, it's 3.5 hours. And I'm like, yeah. But they, you know, they really worship there, you know. But I'll tell you that there was a moment, I have been sensing more and more that I think that God can move in just a song. And I had that happen this morning where there's just, you know, I felt the Spirit come in on me. And two Sundays ago when I was kneeling before all my stuff, remember, I don't know if many were here, but I put my stuff there. Now, I'm trying to hold it together and end the sermon because as soon as I kneeled down, the Spirit just hit me like a ton of bricks, you know. I've been dreaming dreams again and getting vision again. Relationships that I thought were dead and gone, that I had thrown away, are beginning to come back. We're beginning to, you know, the Steve Pope thing happening when it happened. It's kind of like I when I was asking the Lord what is really going on, I felt Him say, I'm going to do a work of new beginnings in you. And then there will be a new creation of sorts that will take place. And that when I come, I'm going to come with power. And when I come, I'm going to come with, He's going to bring, there's blessings on that tail end that will come. And why I'm doing what I'm doing today is because I feel like in some aspects I need to lift you up. I tell you, it came to me about Monday when I was mocking the movie 300. And, you know, in the context of those of you, these are Spartans, you know. Real men, Spartans, is kind of like saying real men figure skaters, you know, because the Spartans were kind of, you know, they were really Greek, you know. So I thought the movie would have been more interpretive if you would have put a little bit more of a silly spin on it and said, you know, we're Spartans and we're going to fight. Yeah. And it really happened and they really were He-Men, but it just seemed a little odd to me, you know. And so I was mocking this 300, you know. And I was wondering in my mind, because when you're in seminary, you do a lot of studies on text, you know, scripture, trying to understand what's going on. And so you learn this thing called form criticism, and they don't drill it in your head, but you just know what it's about, you know. And so I was connecting the story with the Gideon story. Now, I know it's hundreds of years after the point, but in my mind, it's very common in Old Testament times, like the creation story, that one people group is telling a story, the other ones are hearing the story and then adopting it for themselves, so it's very likely that maybe that story could have passed on, but it's very, very close to the Gideon dynamic. I mean, the number 300 is just like right there, you know? So, not that it didn't happen. I mean, it may have actually happened. I'm just saying that there's a connection there. And so when I was talking about the 300, the Lord was just driving into us that we have been a spiritual archetype of Gideon, that we have done more with very little. And it has to do with the way that we think about the world. And that's very, very important, because when I go forward here, you'll see that some things have changed, but I think it's important for clarity to talk about that. I believe that you have influence, and I believe that you have the Spirit of Christ, and I believe that whatever does happen in this next wave is going to intricately and intimately involve you. And so I think it's important that you know what kind of place I had envisioned Full Life to be. Hi, Russell. My initial vision has always been this, and this is not my creation. I got this from a minister that I respect named Gerald Mann, who now has Parkinson's and he can't talk. And his home church that had this as a mission has now pretty much changed their vision, and this is completely gone forever kind of thing. And through one of Gerald Mann's associates, I kind of had permission to not only modify it, but keep that. I never saw anything that resonated so much with me than I did this statement, which is why it's here. Which is, it's a variation of it. But I believe that we do exist to reclaim the lost. And you've heard me say that time and time again, and I'm not sure that you've really wrapped your mind around what it means to reclaim that which is lost. But think about it more in terms of position. This is a positional statement. And when I say reclaiming the lost, I'm talking about anything that is not in a restored or redemptive purpose for God. So I'm saying that every person that might not know the Lord, that you might have a coworker or something, and if they are outside of the context of God's redemption, I see them as a target of reclamation, that we need to reach them in some way, because I believe they belong to God. I believe that every person that is born is loved by God. Now that might be, somebody might call me to task on that, and has recently I told you about the bookstore thing. One of the pastors said, "Well, just send him to John's church because John thinks God loves everybody." And I do. I really do. I didn't say that every person has a relationship with God and is saved, but I think God loves every person. And that's why I think that they're lost. But I see Christians as lost sometimes. I think there's Christians that just don't know what the heck they're doing. I think that they're out there just floating. So I'm saying that if it's not what God wants it to be, then I see that as a target of reclamation, that we should be getting it. And I put in here the bruised, broken, and bored because it's a little contemporary. But I think people are wounded. I think people have lives are shattered. And I think that there's a sense of cynicism to this culture that we live in. And I think that there's a cause of Christ. When I say the cause of Christ, I'm not talking about marching down the street with some banner. I'm believing that the cause of Jesus is the reclamation. You know, we are to seek and save that which is lost. And that's Jesus' words. That they might be restored to the fullness of life that God intends, and then be released to replicate, that's where you come in, the kingdom of God in others. And again, I modified that a little bit. I think it's important to recognize when I talk about reaching the cynical and the unchurched, it's because I feel that the church is too much of a controlled environment. And I don't want to slam other churches outside to say that there's not much thought about the world out there and the struggles that people face. And so churches tend to become, and I mean, I know how to do it, and I've done it. I mean, I know how to have the perfect praise team with perfect white teeth, and they're all pretty. And I know how to, you know, wear a suit and look nice, and I know, there's churches I respect that do this. They have what's called a pulpit strategy. And they actually fire people when they don't look the part or act the part. Yeah, Chris?
I'm sorry. Pulpit strategy?
A pulpit strategy. Where if somebody doesn't look the part, they get rid of them. Or if people don't like them, they get rid of them. You know, it really happens. You know, one day we call it the preacher rapture, where one day someone's in a position and the next day they're gone. To bear witness, a friend of mine in the Valley, Tim Coleman, pastors Calvary Chapel, but at the time that Tim and I were introduced to each other was about 20 years ago when both of us were barely saved and working at Northrop in Newbury Park. And Tim was a part of a very large church in Newbury Park, and he was let go because he was 60 pounds overweight. And that serves as a cause of hurt. But you know, there are real hurts and wounds in the world out there. And it's my opinion that when you look at the numbers of the church, we could play church if y'all want to. I mean, we could do everything that they do and be that. But I don't think it's bearing witness to the authentic work that God is doing in you, because I know it's not bearing witness to the authentic work that God's done in me. Because too many times people have had to live most of their life unsupported on the fringes. And they've not been given access until they've, quote-unquote, gotten their act together. Their brokenness is not dealt with. The issues of life are not accepted. And so people just kind of harp on down their parade. It's their parade, and they're going to march it, and they can live in denial land all they want. Which, you know, preachers preach about holiness, and they preach about purity, and yet we still have pastors that are falling to pornography and getting involved in immorality. And, I mean, it's happened right here, you know. I mean, some of the bigger hits here have happened in this valley themselves. And I don't think that what they're saying isn't true. I'm just saying it may not be a complete picture of what's really going on in the world. You know, there's human need out there that's genuine. There's brokenness that's genuine. And I have seen the weight of burden on the lives of people that have not made the grade, and it makes me sick to my stomach. And it sickens me that I participated in that, and I pretended I was just everything that everybody wanted me to be. I marched in the parade, and I can't do that. Does that make sense? I mean, I could if you guys tackle me, but I don't think that that's why you're here either. But I'll tell you that it's not real. It's like Disneyland. It's some fantasy, but behind the scenes, there's a real life out there, and people really struggle. And I think it's important to become a center of hope. And when I say we should be a center of hope, it means I don't think we should be playing games. I don't think we should be putting on airs. I think we should be authentic with what we're talking about. And I'm going to be heading towards Easter, and it's very important that you understand that I believe that each person here has experienced God in a real way, and you have a personal story of resurrection that you can tell about and bear witness to how Christ has lifted you up from a low place. But it's important. And the world's cynical. And why is the world cynical? Why is this song like this and many others? Why is Alanis Morissette saying if God was one of us, it's a slob? And why do they think that about God? Because they see churches as closed systems and phony. You can go on the internet and you could see this one of these films called Jesus Camp, and it should scare the bejeebus out of you just to watch it, but you can see what people are doing out there. There's another film out called Friends of God. And when you watch it, I want you to know that I wanted to watch it and say, be critical of it and say, oh, those heathens. But when I saw the film, I was embarrassed. I was honest to God embarrassed for how the church represents itself. I was embarrassed. And I was saying, wow, is that really what's going on? And I don't want that. You know, I understand the cynicism of the world. But I think that's the point in what I was talking about last week, is that Jesus isn't that. You know, Jesus is not that portrait. You know, Jesus is not who many churches think that he is. And again, I'm not trying to isolate us from the churches. I'm actually trying to say we need to be clear about what we believe about those things. And it's that difference that is the distinctive that keeps us on. Because for every church I think is phony, I think there's a real church. Like, you know, to be honest with you, I just so appreciate Tim Hoskins. And every morning I come on the property and they've got three guys and their church is actually, you know, we look at us sometimes and go, wow, we're struggling. But man, they've really been struggling. And these people are praying faithfully every morning. They're out there praying. And the churches are doing good works. It's just that, again, if you're just centered on the good people, and our ministry is the square peg ministry, I mean, we coined that phrase, and we need to be a place of belonging, then we can't pretend to be something other than we're not. Does that make sense? And so I think that there's about touching the cynical and the unchurched and the wounded in a way that they have not been touched before, and then giving them that healing, life-transforming power in God's grace. And that's where you hear me talk about the love and grace of God. Which you'll see very clearly in a minute how important this is to me. But that love and grace message has been very important to me, okay? To reach people, I had to make certain decisions about the style of worship and preaching content. This has been an evolution for me because I have preached at one level, and now when I watch Channel 40, it's just me, but I feel strangely distant from that message. Not that it's not good, but I watch their style of preaching, and I say to myself, that's probably not reaching the kind of people that I feel like I'm called to reach, if that makes sense. So it's a deliberate, some of the things that you see at Full Life are deliberate. Like, I cuss a little sometimes. But, you know, again, I think that that's because the culture has changed. They're a lot harsher now than they used to be. Words, etymology is what that study's called, where words take on changing meanings as time goes on, you know? A scene out of a movie called Anchorman, where Ron Burgundy says a bad word on the prompter, and he is immediately fired for saying a bad word. And to exemplify how indoctrinated people are, this was someone, Ron was like this guy's idol. You know, he just loved Ron Burgundy. And all he could think to say when Ron Burgundy was fired and said that bad word is he's like, he calls Ron Burgundy a poop. You know, you poop. And then he cries and he runs out the door. It's a very hilarious scene. But the reason it's funny is because that's become irrelevant at some point in time. You know, the language of people. It used to be the language of the streets. Well, that's no more. Yeah, I sat in Starbucks this morning to see if I was off. And when you hear the conversations that go on in line around you, you'll know that I'm telling the truth. That the meaning of things has taken relevance, or taken a whole different twist, you know. And my thinking is always a little odd about this. I think when somebody says shoot, and they mean the other, that God knows the difference. I think that God knows what you're thinking. That our thoughts are as loud in heaven as our words. So we say shoot to be convenient, but Lord knows what we mean on the other end. So it was a deliberate act. I'm not trying to be unsacred. I'm not trying to be on the street. I think that this is the language that people are speaking. And so I think it's important that you see that some of the things that we've done have been intentional. You know, it's that like the showing of which you'll see in a minute, but like showing secular videos at times in the church. Why? Because I think the message is relevant, and I think that it speaks of hope, like that thing with Johnny Cash. You know, a lot of people are trying to make Johnny Cash this perfect Christian. He was not, you know. I mean, he was a man of faith, which I think is different. And what I wanted to show you was how an uncouth person was a person of faith touched the music community so deeply. You know, we haven't even gone into Bob Dylan, but I think he's kind of in the same boat. You know, we were so easy to scrutinize and to be critical of what people are doing, but there's lots of faith out there. You know, we just have to kind of like learn to adjust our expectations about what's going on. So that's been the driver, and it's flowing out of my core belief of who we are. And when I say who we are, I don't just mean us as a church, I mean as people. I want to try to minimize the line between how people act in church and how they act in the world. I want that boundary, that border to go away. So it's consistent, you know? And what I mean by that is not that you become Joe Perfect and criticize all the smokers there, you know, in your smoking area. Maybe you go talk to them. You know, somehow that line has to get smaller and our world has to get bigger. So I call that term relational evangelism or authentic living. And so it's progressive worship, it's reality-based, it's important. Okay, transformation, experience, and mission. I see mission as being what we do, our purpose, which can be broken up into hospitality, creativity, diversity. Transformation has to do with, I think healing happens in the context of others, sanctuary, a place of repose and worship, and then experience experiencing God has lots of dimensions to it, but I'll talk about those too. Okay. An inviting sanctuary that provides a refuge of fellowship, rest, and renewal. I want our church not building, but I want our people to be that as well. We take people in, always have. People here take people in. You always will. We always have to look at the need to be a sanctuary, refuge, a place of rest and renewal, place of fellowship. It's more than just a donut table. It's much more than just a donut table. You see, when people hit this campus, it was driven out of my experience in Sunday school. I think you've heard me tell the story where kids were coming to Sunday school and they hadn't eaten breakfast. And when I was trying to do Sunday school, it was really distracting that they were hungry, and I couldn't figure out why the parents wouldn't feed the kids. But I want you to think about the paradigm here for a minute. It's important to come to church. It's also important that you feed your kids. But doesn't it show you the off balance or how off balance people's priorities are? Does that make sense? It's like real care for their kids. You know, I mean, sure, they could have gotten up an hour earlier. Maybe it's a discipline problem. But I really think that the church culture is weird. I mean, we don't see people as successful Christians unless they are given their a gajillion hours and sacrificing their whole life just to be in church. That's the truth. I mean, if we don't get people that are just like, oh my God, absorbed in church, then we don't think of them as good, committed Christians. And I'll tell you where I think this happened. I think by talking to Ken Kraft, who is a pastor locally, who'll know I'm saying this, you know, he believes that if the woman that he had an affair with had not been in such a vulnerable place, that wouldn't have happened. But she made the church her life, and she lived at the church, and she wasn't at home. And because she wasn't at home and she was living at the church, she began to look at the church as a place where she can get other needs met, and ultimately it got to a bad experience. Does that make sense? I want that to happen here. Does that make sense? I want people to like have normal families and go to the park and join soccer. Because it's in the world. But it's important. Does that make sense? I don't want people to feel like crap because, you know, oh my God, I had to go to work. I mean, I know somebody that quit their job so they could come to church on Sunday, and I'm not sure that really is what I was talking about, you know, because then they needed money from the church to help them make their bills. And that just didn't make any sense. But you understand what I'm talking about. The world is the church is a really strange place. It's like this big black hole, and you get ultimately sucked into it, you know? And so we kind of play the game a little bit, but it's a matter about what we think is important. And it's not that those things can't be important. They're all done out of the sense of trying to reach people. You know, you get into Broadway plays at churches or whatever the big outreach is. They've always talked about thousands of people coming, but I'm going to be honest with you. In 25 years of being in the church, those things have done very little to reach people for Christ. You just don't see it happening. You know, we had 1 billion people accept the Lord at our Easter service. Well, where are those 1 billion people? Well, they're all really, really busy, but they said they're going to come, you know. What really happens on Easter is your unsaved friends feel guilty because they think they're supposed to be in church, and so they come to church with you. Then I say the altar call, and they all accept the Lord, and then they go back to their original lives that they were leading before they ever got there. That's the truth. 10 years of Promise Keepers, and I gave it a bunch. Let me tell you, friends, I gave it a bunch. But statistically, there are no more men in church now. It's worse than it was after all that effort of Promise Keepers. Top Gun, whatever you want to call it. It's the truth. I'm telling you the truth. You may not want to hear it. You may think I'm full of crap. I don't care. It's the truth. So you spent all this money. You got all this energy. And you'd be more effective in having a stinking play in your living room inviting your parents over than you would be to do that because more people are going to get touched. It's the truth. But you won't find Christians at family reunions. You won't find Christians at, because they're considered hedonistic or all that bad stuff happens. What about reaching the people in your sphere of influence? Are you hearing what I'm saying? I mean, it's important that you see that. that you're a healing agent, and that's important. And maybe we make a family here because maybe some of you like me have such a flippin' dysfunctional family that you feel worse afterwards, you know. Usually a lot of drunkenness and debauchery, most of it's coming from me because I can't handle what's going on, you know. It's too much craziness. But I'm passionate about this. I'm passionate that there's a truth. When Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life, he wasn't just talking about acknowledging that, but he was indicating that there was a journey that every Christian must take and that very few would find it because it's so off the beaten path. Does that make sense? And my thing is on measured. What is really effective in bringing people to Christ? You know? I'll tell you how I've led people to Christ. I've led more people to the Lord by marrying them than anything else I've ever done. And I'm talking a decade of street witnessing. I was with Keith Green in last day's newsletter, and I published Bible studies. I walked with some of these guys that are touting now, all their evangelists. I was there, and we did it, and to be honest with you, the numbers were not really there. I mean, I spent time with Arthur Blessett, the guy that carried the cross, you know. I had Ray Comfort and I, our associates. We spent time together, and he came and preached at our church down the corner. And all of that's good, and it's fun, and you can do it, but as long as your motivation's in the right situation and you're honest with what's really going on. This lady gave testimony at the leadership thing I go to about how sometime last week, some guy took a bullhorn to Cal State Northridge, and they just were telling everybody they're going to hell, you know, going to burn in hell. And she was offended by that message, and I understand why, because that's really not what Jesus really, really said for us to do. He said, go make disciples. You know, when he said go in the world, he was talking about teaching people the way of Christ. So I see that as a threshold that begins to set in the minds of people that come in here the fact that we are open to them. And I'll talk about that a little bit more here. In Luke chapter 7, yeah, you're not expected to do that. We see the story of a prostitute that comes to Jesus while he is sitting in the house of a religious leader. And the religious leader is angry at Jesus because he sees, I invited this guy to my house to eat dinner, and now some whore is worshiping at his feet, and he's not doing anything about it. And he's pissed that that's happened. And so Jesus tells the man a parable, and the meaning of the parable at the end, he says, who do you suppose would be more grateful for a debt being forgiven, the one who owes a little or the one who owes a lot? And the man says, well, obviously the one who owes a lot. And he said, when I came into your house, you didn't kiss me, you didn't greet me, and this woman has not stopped since the moment she got here to worship at my feet, to wash my feet with her tears. And I'm not taking that from her. I'm not taking, and I don't care that she's a whore. And I'm saying it like that because that's really what's going on. That's what's going on in your mind. It's what's going on in the mind of the world. Their worship services are going on and they're exclusionary, and we have a risk of doing that, and I don't want that to happen. I want to pull in the borders because people are important. Without people, full life is nothing. It's meaningless, and I'd rather close the doors than try to live in a life that doesn't have a ministry that's about the people, the real needs of the people. Does that make sense? You hearing what I'm saying? And there's whores out there that need the Lord. You know, last Sunday, when Joe came into this church, I was watching to see how people would relate to him. Because he's the homeless guy that lives out there in the corner, right? Do you know he comes to our church? Do you understand that? Do you understand the power of that? He comes to our church. He can go to any one of these churches. He comes to our church because he feels like he's accepted. And he feels like no one's judging him. And I don't want to spook him away. Does that make sense? When Eric first came to lead worship here, he was always troubled because he always thought he was doing things wrong. He's like, oh, man, that didn't happen. And I'd spend a half hour on the phone afterwards, just him, oh, just horrible. I told him, man, you got to put things into perspective. And some of you have already heard me say this. But that particular Sunday that he was complaining, a kid that I have known since he was in a youth group was dating a girl who was an adult film star. And she came to church with him. And it was the same Sunday that Mark Eric brought his girlfriend to church. And his girlfriend worked for Penthouse, coordinating the Penthouse pajama parties. And these two people were worshiping the Lord. They had their hands up and they were singing songs. Like, Eric, I don't know how bad you were. But you had people worshiping the Lord. You had an X-rated star worshiping Jesus, and then somebody here doing that. That's pretty damn good. My nephew comes to church here. Nobody criticized him because he smelled like beer or smoked pot, you know. It was just Nathan, and people accepted that. That is the beauty of full life. That is the beauty of full life. Because we don't make it very complicated to get in the door. Yeah, we don't freaking start on time. That irritates people. We could do better. But I'll tell you what that is better than. It's better than watching this worship team get into some freaking kind of a battle or war every week because they're not ready and their mind's not wrapped around it. You know, I don't want to put on a show, you know. I don't feel like I should get up here on Sunday morning and go, here's the band, you know. Worship the Lord now. It's not real. Do you understand what I'm saying with that? So it's about that back there. I can't get there, but it's about creating space. That's what Jesus did. He created space. I created spit. But Jesus created space, and he let the woman worship. He didn't judge her. He didn't say, clean yourself up. He just said, I accept it. Does that make sense? Hospitality, in my mind, is missional living. This ought to be help to some of you who are wondering if I have any plan at all. And the answer is, yeah. I don't have all the details because you can't buy this model anywhere. You can't, $19.99 gets you nothing on churchvision.com. It just doesn't happen. Because you almost have to dismantle church in order to put it back together and look at, you know, somebody said, it's kind of like you're trying to create a Christian monastery. I don't know, maybe I am. Maybe somebody said you're trying to create a Christian commune. I don't know, maybe I am. All I can tell you is that it's not working out there. You ever gone to church and found the church closed? Is that a weird one for you? Other churches are like that. You know, the pastors are so dang busy that nobody can ever get a hold of them. I don't know what they're doing, but some are busy, but not all of them. Does that make sense? You can hardly get a hold of me, so that's probably not an indictment either, but I'll ultimately call you back. But normally I'm with somebody or I'm doing something. You know what I mean? There are a lot of people here that have needs, and you try to do all you can do, but if we ever did have our own building, there would be part of that building that would be open 24 hours a day, and there'd be somebody sitting there offering communion, and in my opinion, there'd be somebody there open, you know? We'd maybe put a little residence or something next to the church building so they could live there, but when people came and needed prayer, somebody'd be there. Does that make sense? I think that it's important to go to hospitals and visit people, you know? I always get people saying, oh my gosh, you know, thank you for coming. I'm like, geez. I'm not the only one. Other pastors goes and visit people. You know, it's important. That's where you connect with people. Living in cultural engagement, when you want to engage the culture, that'll find its shape in hospitality. It's Jesus' words. Do you see this woman? You know, most of us aren't looking at the woman. We're not really looking at the woman. We're just observing whatever the problem is, but we're not looking at the woman. How many don't look at homeless people, or you just pretend they're not there because you're afraid a little bit? Be honest, how many do that? That's where that hits, right there. Jesus saw the woman and he created space. Where we trust in the trust, and here's what I do rely on. I rely on the touch, the truth, the time, and the relentless compassion of Jesus and how that can transform the human heart. I think if we just stay open, people get it and they get better and they come to know the Lord. This last week, my nephew called me from rehab. And When he went into rehab, it was just to keep him out of jail, if that makes sense, you know. But at the end of his conversation, he said, I'm praying for you. And my wife's like, oh my God, they give him a brain transplant or something? What's going on? But I think that that can happen. Now, here's some big words for you. The societal shift of transformative reconciliation under grace. Thank you, Dr. Storms. Societal shift of transformative reconciliation under grace. When I say reconciliation, I firmly believe that the potential for the whole cosmic universe, everything in the created order has taken a proverbial U-turn and it started to head towards light. And that we are a part of that reconciliation. We're taking back what was once in dark territory, bringing it into light. So, in personal speaking, drive it home. I got some papers here because I wanted maybe just to pass these out. Mike, can you just help me and pass these out? I want you to think of ways that you've done this. You know, like in the Lacey's have been helping us with taking these two kids into our life, but they've done this years and years and years. All the other of you have done this as well. What are you doing to make that real? Like Meredith, you know, you took in your nephew and, you know, what ways are you doing that? Or what ways can you do that? You know, is there a grandchild you could take to McDonald's maybe one time this week? Can you take your wife out to dinner, you know? Margarita Monday, something. Have you had a broken relationship with a child that you can call today and just say, what are you doing? I want you to write down something you can really do that's real. Transformative reconciliation. What can you do? What's a step that you can take towards reconciliation in the life of someone? Because when I do weddings now, I include the line that everything you do in life will flow from this moment. Everything else will pale in comparison, and I close with the line that your real work in ministry starts here. Does that make sense? It don't mean jack diddly if you're a pastor and nothing. So what? You die with a title. If you are forgetting that you are a missional person and that is your work in ministry, a lot of people forget that. And I want Full Life people to be people that really recognize that that is a priority. Those who have been around us for a long time will probably speak to the overall acceptance that Sue and I have of each other. I am definitely more rugged than she is, but it's not like she is, you know, Queen Perfect. You know, she has rough edges too. And it's the fact that she can be herself unguarded and I can be myself unguarded that seems to work in our relationship. When I say that I see Sue as my mission, I don't see her as my mission project. Does that make sense? I see that I am to be there for her fully. She's my responsibility. Does that make sense? And so sometimes I have to kind of do something because she needs it, not because I want to do it. And I think that there's lots of people around us that are in the same situation. It's that servant leadership that I'm always talking about, that real pastoring is born out of serving. So I think that it's the process of unifying people to share without pretense or fear of our common humanness. If you think for 1 minute that you're any different than anybody else that lives out there in the world, you got another thing coming. Because I don't know what it is for you, but you're human. And there's something in there that's really human, and you need to somehow get to the mindset where that's not an issue for you anymore. So that's where the weak, the marginalized, the misfit, the prodigal, the bored. We need to be a place where all of that is embraced. And I ended that by saying that it's a place where a stranger can enter and become a friend. It doesn't mean that you're friends of everybody who enters, but they can become a friend, you know? Our daughter, Sandy, you know, we met her when she was about 10. Her mother died, and I told you the story last week, so I won't repeat it. But, you know, she's part of a church community that's doing a lot. But the thing that I find surprising the most is how many people don't know the story, because they're just not exposed to it. People just don't know each other enough to know that that's really going on, you know? Who is my neighbor, Jesus said? Who is my neighbor? And we sometimes interpret that to mean people just like us. But that's not what Jesus was referring to. You know, I think it has to do with knowledge, intimacy, the fact that we actually know something about each other. Compassion. We make friends with people that have not experienced God's grace and love. I'll tell you, in this era of our church life, and I have to think about this because I don't know how I'm going to do it because I'm pissed off at some people myself. But I got to figure out how to make that threshold to come back easier for people. I don't know how to do it. So I'm going to need your help, because I'm going to need some of you to tell me, hey, you got to talk to this person even if you don't want to. Because, I mean, there's some people that I see and immediately my triggers go up. You know what I'm saying? And I don't just want to run and hide. I want to whoop, you know. There's some people in this community that, you know, they've said things that weren't true, and, you know, they flat out lied and stuff. And so I see those people, and I'm different than you, because I know none of you think this. But when you see those people, I'm like, oh, you can go. Can't do that, you know. I got to somehow figure out how to make that threshold just a little bit lower so that people can, you know, talk to me about it. That happened when I went to go see Russ. There's a guy comes into Russ's son. This guy come into the hospital, and as soon as that guy walked in, I was like, there's going to be an ass whooping, and good thing we're in the emergency ward, because something's going to happen. And God brought that guy there. That's why it's fun to hang out in hospitals, because at least you get to see people you're angry at. You know, no, that's not what I did. But I didn't know what to do, because I mean, it was like, boom. Ugh, what am I going to do? You have somebody like that in your life? Yeah, well, yep. And I'm not saying open yourself up to hurt. I'm just saying that when true reconciliation starts to happen, we got to figure out. Because I'll tell you right now, there's a lot of full-lifers out there that left thinking that they were going to go to some greener grass and some ministry someplace. And, you know, they were kind of tired and frustrated. And it just seemed so exciting. And we seemed kind of boring, you know, whatever. And so they went out there. And now they don't know how to get back home. I mean, I ran into one just day before yesterday, and where are you going to church? Nowhere. Well, why don't you come on Sunday? Oh, I couldn't. All those people are mad at me. For what? Because I left. I betrayed you. Did you cry? Betrayed you. Betrayed me? You didn't betray me. You just went to another church. I don't care, you know. I go to another church, too. No, I'm kidding. So, do you understand what I'm saying? You guys understand what I'm saying? When they do walk up to you and there's that kind of an action, you know, I didn't go, oh, it's about time you came to your senses, worship at my feet. You know, just the ring. So here's another story, and Michelle is out today because they went up to Tahoe, but George had a ministry where he needed to lay on some hands and go golfing and stuff. But Matthew 25... Jesus starts the phrase in verse 3 by talking about placing sheep. He's in the process of separating sheep and goats, which only makes sense in the context of the book of John, where Jesus says, I'm the good shepherd, which only makes sense when you look in the context that in the Old Testament prophets, a major theme there was how the leaders of God's people were hindering God's people from restoration and hindering God's people from worship and not taking care of the practical needs of God's people. You know, spirituality is defined in Isaiah not that someone prays and fasts for a gajillion hours. But Isaiah said, that's good, but you need to do the fast that the Lord's called you to do, and that means you need to help the widows and help the orphans. That's the fast I'm calling you to. And I think people over-spiritualize things, and they make it way too impractical. When in reality, you know, we had a person leave the staff because of the Samaritan Center. And it was her opinion that everybody that was helping at the Samaritan Center were just lazy people that didn't want to work and were losing focus and they weren't laying hands on people. Even though the Samaritan Center told us that if we fed the homeless, we were to restrict ourselves from getting on any kind of a soapbox and messing that up. That we're just to feed the people. And actually, this woman yelled at me. She said, how can you sleep at night with all those people going to hell and all you've done is put food in their bellies? You should be ashamed of yourself. She hung up the phone. It's not ministry. Okay, whatever. So obviously she didn't lead the Samaritan Center after that. But where Michelle took it over. Which is good, because let me tell you, I think that she's really grown a lot this year, and she's done what I've talked about. She's taken on a ministry by herself, and she's kind of championed the cause with lots of you helping. But, you know, she doesn't put me under tension because she knows I can't be there at that time. But I did it for a long time. You know, I mean, that was me leading that. And I appreciate what she's doing. But she operates under this spirit, because we talk about it all the time, which is that I think there's great power in a cup of water and a piece of bread. I mean, I think that that you give something to someone just out of compassion and it makes a difference. Does that make sense? Sometimes you just buy someone an ice cream cone or, you know, take them to Foster Freeze or get a hamburger or do something. But there's people that you can reach just by having just stinking point of hospitality. So it's born out of the idea that we understand that our love for one another is a witness to the world of the love of Christ. Now, I'm not done, but I'm done. Because I just want to talk to you for a couple minutes before that happens. But I need your help because I kind of am at the point where we got to bring it all home somehow, you know? So I thought about putting in a little clip out of the first Batman where he says, tell your friends about me, whatever. And I know a lot of you do tell a lot of people about Full Life. But the first question is do you hold those ideals? I mean, do you share those thoughts? Do you see that as important, what I'm saying? Because I think that we can do this also in a radical context where we're not stewarding the lives of each other, you know? So, I mean, that's important vision. Are you clear at this point what I'm talking about? Can anybody share just for a minute that you think that's important or not important? I mean, you see that what I see is important.
Okay.
So, maybe I could be a little nicer, and maybe I could be a little less edgy. You know, I understand. But maybe we could be a little bit more real about what we're talking about and what really is at risk, because we do have that kind of an influence and impact, you know, on people. It's important. Lord, I just thank you for our church. Bring us together, God, and do that new creative work of creation that you're talking about. I pray as we're moving towards Easter season, Lord, that we would sense a resurrection of hope that we haven't had in a long time. Be peace to us today, God. Be hope to us today. Help us, God, by your Spirit. I thank you because Full Life would be nothing without the people that you have sent. Keep us moving. In Jesus' name, amen.